Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th.
Good evening. Welcome to Patriot Family Chat. We are glad that you are here. We welcome everyone. Please do come in, check in, sign in, call in. We would love to have you. Call in number 646-378-0321. The show hails from patriotfamilies.com with a YS, and we have 5-6 shows a week. We love having you, and we encourage you to stop by the website at patriotfamilies.com and look at the listing of all the shows and come and join us. But let's get started with tonight. It is... It just blows my mind that we are right back where we started with the beginning of McCain's campaign. We have a moron out there running who doesn't want to throw dirt and doesn't want to get nasty and doesn't want to tell the truth. And to me, if you're telling the truth, you're not throwing dirt. You're not getting dirty. You're telling the truth. And if you can't tell the truth about someone's record, if you can't tell the truth about someone's associates, if you can't tell the truth about somebody trying to pay somebody off to get them out of the way, that's not playing dirty, people. That is not playing dirty. That's telling the truth. That's putting it online, putting it on record as it is. Okay? And now you got the Democrats splitting on attack ads. Okay? Not wanting to go after Romney in the way that the Obama campaign seems to be wanting to do it. Just find out what the truth is and put the truth out there. Okay? It's just that simple. It is just that simple. I mean, tonight's 6 o'clock news, 7 o'clock news, is leading with a plane diverted, an F-15 scrambled, because some woman said that she had a surgically implanted a bomb in her body. Well, you know what? Come on. Show me a scar. Show me a scar. Okay? That would say so. All right? That would say, yeah, you did that. But if, you know, where are all the air marshals that are supposed to be on these airplanes from foreign countries coming to this country? Where are they at? You know, if you had an air marshal on the flight, he does a search of the woman. He apprehends her. He takes her to the back of the plane. He searches her. If she's got no visible scars, then she's lying. You know, come on. You scramble two F-15s and burn all that fuel. And I'm telling you, they're going to come back and say, no, she didn't have anything in there. Okay? The second one disgusts me even more. We've got a private company using federal launching pad to launch a rocket into space to go to the space station. What happened to this nation? You got a private company going to make billions of dollars doing this. And you know what? Here's the sad part. The damn federal government's going to be paying them to do it. Okay? First private rocket mission to the International Space Station. And the government's going to be paying them massive amounts of money, massive amounts of money, to fly people to space. Now, here's the other thing that I got to ask. Okay, if this private company, hello Ron, if this private company took off to space and they make it to the space station, turn around and make it back, okay, what the cost difference is going to be versus us doing it as NASA versus a private company? I'm going to tell you, folks, the stupidity is we're going to spend, yes, it's good for the economy, but the federal government will spend more money paying that private company to do what it should be doing through NASA. Okay? I don't know what the hell they're going to mine on asteroids, Bill, but that's okay. They won't let us mine anything here in this country because we're of the environmentalist wacko movement. So I guess you have to do it, you know, in space, where you create more space junk and more debris and, you know, take a chance on killing somebody. So, you know, there's got to be private jobs in there, Ron, for them to be able to build that rocket and send it up. You know, that's the bottom line. And who's training these people to go into space? Is NASA training them? Are they paying NASA for the training? That's another question. Back to the campaign and the negative ads and the negative garbage, people. I mean, let's face it, politics is ridiculously stupid as it is. Okay? This rocket carried ashes of 300 people. I guess they're going to let them out in space. I don't know. But, oh my God. It just amazes me what people want done. People from the defense industry that have gone private. Either way, folks, their funding's coming from the federal government. It's got to be. Yeah, we paid to train them already. That must be how it worked out. See, I knew the federal government was there already. Okay, now they got GOP. Romney could officially clinch the GOP nomination next week with Arizona and Kentucky. Or Arkansas and Kentucky, excuse me. And somebody put on the chat room that Ron Paul got 32 delegates today. If Romney could clinch with two more states, I don't think Ron Paul is going to take a chance, going to be able to overrun him. But, oh, there's Ron on the phone already. I'm sitting here in La La Land. There we go. Good evening, sir.
Hey, Hollis. You knew I couldn't resist calling in. You know, the deal with the private space thing, I don't have a problem, I guess, necessarily with private companies. Are they really private when they're doing government contracts? I mean, I understand. I think NASA, you know, NASA is kind of unique among all the things that, you know, we've done. Somebody always said, you know, name something that government gets right. I would say they got it right with NASA, and I'd say they got it right with national parks. Aside from that, they've screwed up everything they've touched.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, when I said whose economy, what I meant was who's going to be getting fat and stinking rich off of this junk. It's the same folks that you're going to see in, like, a Kellogg Brown Root and that kind of thing. It's defense contractors or offshoots from the defense contractors that are going to be pushing this kind of stuff. And, hey, you know, if Richard Branson gets involved in something, and more power to him. I don't begrudge these people making a profit.
Well, he says he's working on it. So
right. And
that
that's
in
a
no
good
time,
thing.
He's going to have a ship that can go fly around in space. So,
and he may well have. But, you know, I mean, we look at all the other things that we should be focused on, and I know a lot of technology and advancements and stuff have come from all the money that was poured into NASA. There has been a lot. But I worry about things. You know, I read an article yesterday that since 2011, and this just came out, that China has been able to bypass the Federal Reserve and go straight to our Treasury Department to buy bonds, Treasury bonds. What that tells me is that they didn't want the transactions on the Fed's balance sheet. They don't let Japan come straight to Tim Geithner and buy Treasury notes or bonds right out of the Treasury.
Yeah, that's a little bit
it's disturbing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's disturbing is what it is. For them to be able to go directly to the Treasury.
It blows my mind what's going to be if when Obama's butt's kicked out of office in January and this new administration takes hold, the things they are going to learn are going to be staggering.
Well, I will wait with bated breath to see the revelations of that. I don't believe that we will, but hey, you never know. Romney having been an insider, I don't think there's going to be any shocking revelations to him within our monetary system that are going to be revealed.
I just think there is so much corruption in this administration that when a new one takes place, that they're not going to be able to just whitewash it and hide it. They're going to have to come out with it. It's going to be a situation where you've got a whole new staff in there, a cadre of people, and some are going to very much talk. You're not going to have any way around it. Some are going to have a conscience. Some are going to have, you know, this country's interest at heart, and they're going to have to say, look, this I can't lay down on. We've got to let this be known. And that's what's going to happen.
I think that where there's still a very distinct possibility, and today even Neil Bortz, who has been very critical of the birther issue, showed a crack, you know, and I didn't get to hear the entire portion of his show where he was talking about it. But if you look at the situation, it just seems to me very, very bad. That we've got all the turmoil going on over in the Eurozone. We've got a financial crisis in this country that has yet to be realized. And this issue of Obama's eligibility has not gone away, and it's not going to go away.
It's not going to go away.
And in fact, it's getting more and more traction.
Look at his publicist's 16 years worth of papers out there saying that he was born in Kenya. They don't print that crap for no reason.
Oh, exactly. And I think it's going to get worse. And if that, you know, I mean, that could really throw some serious turmoil out there at election time.
Well, I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be, you know, I think Jeremiah Wright, I don't know if you listen to Beck's show at all, but Jeremiah Wright came out with, you know, he tried to bribe me to back up and disappear. And he says he's got proof of it.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I don't doubt that. And look, I don't doubt that he was born in Kenya. I really don't. If you look at, you know, they were pointing fingers and calling us tinfoil hat and everything else back when Jerome Corsi went over to Kenya and was arrested and thrown in jail. Back when all this birther stuff came out, and Leo Denfro, I think it is his name, the guy that brought the original lawsuit was a Hillary Clinton supporter, and it was before the primaries that he brought this out. That's how people found out about it. And if you sat through the circus of the mock trial that they held with Reverend Manning, who is a guy that is of dubious background, but doesn't always, you know, negate the information that people bring out. If you sat through that information and sift through it, it was stunning. It was absolutely stunning what these investigators had found. They altered his Selective Service card, the date on it, and they know how it was done. And that was something that Sheriff Joe down in Arizona found. And it was, you know, it's these stamps that they used at the post office to date stamp envelopes. Yeah. And, you know, they always have a four-digit date for the year, 1980, 1981. And what they did was they found one from 2008, and they cut the 08 out of it and reversed it. And they took the 2000 out of there and just stamped it 08. Well, Obama is in possession of the only Selective Service card in the history of the United States that had a two-year stamp date on it.
Yeah.
You know, two-digit date stamp.
It just staggers me we can't get more traction on these issues. I mean, if Forbes is talking about it, then there's going to be more traction.
Right, but here's the danger, okay? Let's suppose, and I talked about this on my show last night, let's suppose for a moment that round about October, we have the total collapse of the European Union. Greece and the European zone countries on the verge of, if not at war with each other. The U.S. is in economic collapse, and now we have definitive proof that President Obama is not eligible to hold the office of president. All this prior to the election. Now what do you do? You can't even discuss the upcoming election. You can't even look at holding an upcoming election because you've got this huge morass of 4 years of absolute. You got to wipe it off the books. I mean, just think of the chaos that would create.
It's gonna create a lot of chaos. But Ron, I just don't think that the people in this nation are gonna stand for. You know, Congress is gonna have to step up to the plate. Then you're gonna have to turn around and look at the Supreme Court. Will have to step up to the plate and determine what is and isn't going to be carried out of what he's done.
Well, nothing would be able to be carried out. It would all have to be null and void. Every law he has signed would have to be absolutely gutted. Now, what's that going to do to the folks on Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, given the changes that have happened because of the Obama health care, not to mention a whole litany of things that have changed.
Well,
they will be absolutely
Medicare,
anything.
The disability laws, he's changed the disability laws to the point where if you go on disability and you're backdated on disability, you get about a quarter of the money they owe you.
Oh, well, that I'm not surprised at that. I mean,
you don't get the back pay. You get about a quarter of it. Even though the judge, you go before a judge and they say, okay, you're disabled. We're going to backdate it 3 years because it's taken you this long to get to me. You get 25% of what that 3 years worth of not being able to work. Okay.
Sure.
Pays.
Yeah. But try that the other way around if you owe them money. Unless you're, you know, Geithner.
They're not paying you interest, but you're going to be paying them interest.
Right. Unless you're somebody like Geithner or something like that, then you can, you know, you can get away for pennies on the dollar.
Exactly. Because you're
And you know, people roll their eyes. They don't believe that it's oppression or tyranny, but it absolutely is. I think Alex Jones has got it right. He calls it a soft tyranny. You know, it's not in your face. They're not clubbing you everywhere you go, and you know, you've got some relative freedoms in this country, make no mistake. But the law isn't applied equally to everyone. You know, I was just reading a story of a guy in Tennessee got pulled over. He was an insurance agent, and he was going to buy a car, and he had $20,000 in cash, $1,000 rolls, and he got pulled over for speeding, and the cop asked him if he had any cash on him. And he said, yes, I do. I'm going to buy a car. I've got $20,000. They arrested the guy and took his money.
Goodness.
Took him 3 years to get it back. And the cop said, and in the interview, the cop said, well, you know, the safest place for money, everybody knows, is in a bank account.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so the interviewer asked him, well, do you have any proof that he was doing anything illegal with that money? No. But no one walks around with 20 grand. Well, it's none of your damn business. Since when did it become illegal to have money?
Exactly.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
You deposit over 5 grand and the government has to be told.
Oh, yeah, they do this whole structuring thing. That's what they did to the pastor down in Florida. He paid some of his employees over a 10-year period. He paid a couple of his employees just under $10,000. He would write them checks. Well, they came in, audited his books, and claimed he was structuring, which means setting up payments that are just under the reporting requirement of $10,000. Now, never mind the fact that he's a church, and so all of his employees were paid on a 1099, and all of those people filed their taxes just like the government wanted them to and paid exactly what the government wanted them to pay. They took the amount of his entire payroll for 10 years, $468,000, and said that's what he owed the federal government in back taxes. Now, they had no evidence that the man had done a thing wrong, and he hadn't. He'd done everything by the book. It doesn't matter. And they got a jury to convict him, Hollis.
Freaking amazing.
He hadn't violated a single law. He hadn't done a thing wrong. The guy himself had taken a vow of poverty. Him and his wife didn't drive around a new Cadillac or a new Lincoln. He put everything, every penny he got, he put back into that church. Building a theme park for the kids. Everything was for the ministry. Kent Hovind is his name. I had his son on the radio show before Eric. And he wouldn't talk about it. And I don't blame him. And after the fact, he went to buy back some of the property from the government. And they told him, well, if you give us $90,000, we'll let you have this one little parcel of land. So he did. Well, then they came back and reneged on their agreement, said, nope, you're going to have to give us fair market value. Well, it took them months to raise that $90,000. They kept the money, and he got nothing.
Amazing.
That's your government.
And that's justice in this world.
Well, that's the government idea of justice.
That's why the whole scenario has got to change. And you know what? I'm willing to go through the chaos. If they can prove this man's not legally president, I'm willing to go through the chaos and overturn the crap he's done.
Well, you know, I was reading an article. I'm going to see if I can pull it up today, because that's one of the things that with Romney. And I think most of the decent conservatives out there recognize that Romney is no answer.
Well, we all know that, but he's the only one we've got.
I am hoping, quite honestly, that, I don't know. The votes aren't in yet, so we'll see what happens at the convention. Oh, goodness, where was it? Man, it was an interview with Romney, and they said, you know, one of the things that he spoke about was he wasn't going to cut $1 trillion out of the deficit, and he has no plans for trying to balance the budget.
When was this interview done?
Just very recently. This is within the last couple of days.
Well, if you find it, post it.
I absolutely will. And, you know, I understand that the idea, you know, he's saying, well, the first thing we got to do is get this country back to work. Well, that's true, but you can't just simply create jobs at the wave of a wand. There has to be demand. There's, you know, people have to have money to spend. And it's a vicious cycle. And until we can wash out some of the garbage debt, the bad debt, the dead money, so to speak, in the system, until we can wash that out, it's not going to get a whole lot better.
Well, we've got to, we got to do something to generate income in this country, some way or somehow. We've got to open the oil fields back up. We've got to start drilling in other places. We've got to do the things necessary, take away the regulations they put on all the coal industry and get that sector moving once again. That will make a big difference. And figure out a way to get manufacturing back to this nation. That's all the only way it's going to survive.
Well, right. I mean, I think in a sense, we've got to understand that, you know, manufacturing as it is always going to go to the lowest bidder. That's just the nature of the beast. And we were told, how long ago was it that you heard that we were going to be a service economy? I mean, I can remember hearing that 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That we were going to be a service economy. And there's nothing wrong with being a service economy, but you have to recognize that. And you have to structure your businesses and innovation around that. You know, the companies that make all the big equipment and things like that for manufacturing, like China, you know, to make the equipment that China is using, because they're not making most of their own equipment and all the computer-aided equipment and stuff like that. It didn't come from China. It came from here in the U.S. But you can't, you know, it's not something that's going to simply, we're going to be able to change a few things and poof, the economy is going to come back. It's going to necessarily get a lot worse. And the reason it's going to get even worse is because of the government intervention that's happened and not allowing these bad debts to be cleared out of the system. That's why all these banks are scared to death.
Well, they've regulated banks to where they can't survive. That's the biggest issue with the banks is the regulations they've got on them. They can't survive. They can't keep up with the governmental regulations and requirements to stay open and keep the doors open.
Well, in part, that's true. And I think in part, they're not able to compete with the big banks, the big box banks like Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, you know, Wells Fargo, the big boys, the boys that are too big to fail. And so when they screw up, the government's going to run in and bail them out with the taxpayers' money.
Yeah.
The very depositors that they're supposed to be serving, you know, the very depositors' money that they allegedly were putting at risk in all of this crap to begin with, are the very people that have to backdoor bail them out to save their own bank account. I mean, this is beyond insanity. You know, it's honestly, I've talked about that before. It's like the bank entices you to open an account at the bank so that they can use the appearance of you having money on the balance sheet as a way to entice investors to take out loans, and they loan that money to investors. And then when the investments go sour because of whatever reason, the contrived investments, the bank has to scramble because they don't want to lose their business and they don't want to lose your money. So you end up having to bail them out with your money so that they can loan money to you. It's mind numbing.
Yeah, it's, you cannot, the way the banks have worked right now, the way the regulations the federal governments have put on the banks, You cannot buy a car in this country unless you can prove you make $2,500 a month, period. You can't do it.
Well, and that's twofold.
That's a government regulation to the banks.
You know, that's twofold. And you look at what happened to the used car market, okay? And that was brought to you by Cash for Clunkers.
Yep.
We destroyed, and that directly impacts the poorest people in our society.
Yep.
The people that rely on, you know, $800, $900, $1,000 cars, those things are so few and far between, and the ones that are out there are the biggest pieces of crap. You can't rely on them for anything.
You can't get past the emissions of most states.
Yep.
That's the biggest issue. I mean, I'm looking for one for my son now. I don't have hordes of money to spend. And it's really hard to do.
You know, I've got
cars with $140,000 or 140
miles.
Cars with 140,000 miles on them, and they cost $6,000.
Yeah. Look, I've got a. I've got a customer right now. He's got an 02, I think it is, 2002 Toyota Camry it's a 97 with a broken timing belt. The engine's still good. It's got 130,000 miles on it, and the car's been very well maintained, and he's not sure he wants to spend, you know, $750 to fix it. He said, well, the car's only worth $1,200. I said, where'd you get that from? He said, Kelly Blue Book. I said, well, I'll tell you what. Go on Craigslist. Go to a used car lot. Because I think you're going to find you could sell that car for $3,000 in about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's like, really?
To sell it to me for $500, and I'll pay you the $750 to get the timing belt fixed.
Well, that's why I told him. I said, look, you know, if you decide you're not going to fix it, let me know because I'm interested in buying it from you.
Yeah.
Because it'll cost me $250, and I'll throw a timing belt kit in it, and I'll turn around and sell that joker in a minute, and I'll sell it below market. I'll sell it at $25, and it'll be gone in a day. Because there's a demand for those, you know. Just like you said, you're trying to find a car for your son.
I got to find something for my son to drive, and I want something economical.
Right, you want something economical.
Not by any stretch. I mean, I struggled to scrape together money. I had to put my Suburban went in the transmission shop today. It quit. I drove it till it quit. And it died on me up there in Cherokee County. I was in your neck of the woods today.
Hey, hang on just a minute.
Hello, Bill.
How you doing, Hoss?
I'm good, my friend. Is that Linda on the other line?
I think so. Hi, guys. Oh, how is everybody?
Hey. Hi, Linda.
So you know, what's going on, people?
You know, Hollis, you're talking about these price of cars and stuff, and I swear today I must have passed four cars for $600.
Wow.
Amazing.
You can't find anything for under $1,200 around here.
Oh, I didn't want her to get out. Sorry, I had somebody pecking at the garage door.
Wow.
Son-in-law came home and he didn't have a garage door opener. But yeah, you know, you should have hollered at me. But where'd you take it?
There was what's this guy's name? I just put his card away somewhere. There it is. Wayne Hubbard. Is a guy's name. He's going to charge me $150 to put a rebuilt one in it. So, which is the best price I've found to this point.
Yeah, that's not a bad price. Where's he at?
He came and got it. So, everything else I was getting $1,000 to $1,200.
Yeah.
And that was used transmission, not even a rebuilt one. So. That
yeah,
was
no,
the good Lord looking after me is what it was, because I got stuck and I asked the guy at the park up there, who do you recommend? And he called somebody and gave that number to me, and I called him and my jaw dropped when he told me what he did. You know, this is the price for a rebuilt one. I've got one on the shelf to put it in. I'll have it back to you Thursday morning. I'm like, okay.
Good deal.
That's service.
I just spent $1,000 putting one in the Mazda and a clutch. So I was, I was very pleased. So
absolutely. Yeah, my dad
got 208,000 miles on it, and I'll keep changing the oil and tuning it up, and it'll get three.
There you go.
That's a good deal.
So
I couldn't tell you the number of miles I've put on my bike. I've rebuilt it two or three times. I've had it since 1970.
There you go.
And I've been back and forth across the country probably 10 times at least on it.
Wow, that's a lot.
Well, I considered buying another motorcycle for working back, but the last one I had, I kept getting people trying to run over me. So.
No, that's true. I've been through Georgia, and
I've been hit twice. And
you got some overzealous drivers down there.
Twice and said, no more. I quit. Let somebody else get killed on a motorcycle. It ain't for me. And I love them. I'd love to ride one every day.
Oh, that's kind of a thing here in Indiana. Even our governor rides a Harley.
I can't afford one of those.
You'd be surprised.
Ryan, if you come across another
car,
let me know.
I absolutely will. I'll keep my ear open. And, I don't know what Kevin's going to do with his Toyota yet, but I know there's been a lot of people at work clamoring for it. And I said, yeah, well, see, that's one of the perks of being the service manager, because I'm the guy that's talking to him about his car.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're not, so...
But I've got to come up with something, a car, a little truck, something for him to drive. So.
Well, I got a little tidbit. It's kind of interesting. In a lot of states, you're hearing this battle over raw milk.
Yep.
Yep.
Indiana is going to, they've got a site people can go to, the public can make comments and stuff, and it's going to decide if Indiana is going to once again legalize buying raw milk, selling and buying raw milk.
I think it needs to be done.
I mean, I don't see what the real big issue is here, me, myself. I'm like, put it in the stores, label it. If they want the raw milk, the fresh milk, they'll buy it. If they want this other stuff, they'll buy it. What's the problem?
Well, the problem stemmed from, back in the day, these big dairy farms that, they just mechanically milk all these cows.
Yeah.
It's disgusting, but because they milk them so heavily, you end up with a lot of additional pus and blood that ends up in the milk. And they were shooting them so full of different, vaccinations, antibacterials and hormones and crap, that, people were getting sick. And so they had to heat pasteurize it to kill all the bacteria and, get rid of all the junk that was coming in the blood and the pus that's in the milk. These small Amish farmers, they don't have that problem.
they're not
feeding their cattle, genetically modified corn, and they're not hooking them up to a milking machine and milking the daylights out of them two or three times a day. They just don't run into that problem. And so
we have quite a large Amish population throughout the state. And we have a lot of regular farmers, small farmers, might have 10 or 15 head of cows he milks. And he does them by hand, they still do them by hand and stuff.
Yep.
It's, like you said, the bigger farmers. But there's inspections and stuff where they can check both for those things.
Yep.
So, I'm getting right back to there shouldn't be a major problem. The only problem is, I can see, is you make a whole lot more money if you pasteurize it.
Absolutely.
You that, yeah. So I can see why some of the big dairy farms are throwing a fit, because they see their money slipping away.
That's one of the reasons why they, they fortify it with vitamin D and other things, because they cook all that out of it.
Right. So the problem, Bill, what I see is, what your idea sounds good, is let the free market work. If the people want to buy it, then they'll buy it. And the reason we have the problems we have is because the government meddles into every damn aspect of everybody's lives, and it's crazy. And we're choked. Everybody's just, that's why the economy's one of the reasons it's such a mess, is because people, especially in California and other states too, nobody wants to hire anybody because they know that Obamacare is coming down the pike, and that's not going to be good. They're going to be upside down with that. They're taxing the hell out of them, you know, the corporate tax, the this tax. It's nuts. If the government would get out of our way like it was intended to be, we'd be better off.
Well, you got some people that don't realize it is the government who is messing with your food. If you don't believe that, go look at Monsanto's list.
Mm-hmm.
And look at their ties to the Democratic Party, Hillary Clinton, Obama, Delora, and on and on and on. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a problem. I don't know what, you know, short of the total financial collapse or the removal of the usurper, I don't know. Either way, we're in for a bumpy ride, but... Like I agree with Hollis. I'm ready for the catastrophe just to get through this mess. Maybe turn it around. It's not a fun task.
it won't be pleasant. It'll be very ugly if that's what happens. It'll be very difficult to go through.
Yep.
Well, that's what we're going to have to do.
We're already finding a lot of the under government has been doing to us, both sides of the aisle. And it's
sure.
Like the whole Obama eligibility thing. You don't hear the GOP saying anything, but they don't realize that being silent is saying deafening tones to the rest of us. It's
well,
saying
sure.
They don't care, or they're either complicit in the whole deal.
You know, there's a maxim at law that when you have a duty or an obligation to speak and you don't speak, you're committing a fraud, and it's called a crime of omission.
That's it.
It's a failure to act when you had a duty or an obligation to act.
You mean like upholding the oath they took?
Absolutely.
Jeez, you think,
and,
oh, wow.
And I wanted to make a statement just in case this Exit Babylon is still listening, even though they've left the chat room. Being a patriot doesn't mean worshiping a flag.
It means honoring your country.
It means honoring the principle that country was founded on.
Right. The idea.
If you want to use the religion there, it's in the Bible, honor thy country.
You know, the cross is also an idol. And there's a lot of folks that worship the cross instead of worshiping Christ.
Right.
And
it's
they
a symbol.
Confused. Correct.
It's supposed to be a symbol.
Right. And that's
like,
what it is. That's what
the
most
like the American
Christians
eagle is a symbol. We don't worship
right.
the bird.
We're not idolaters.
We don't
at all.
Worship the
yeah.
symbol. We pay allegiance and we give honor to the symbol because the symbol represents the whole, which is the country.
Yeah, it is. It's a symbol, it's an image that should instill all of those principles on which the country was founded that are right and proper and wholesome, you know, morally correct. The chief among them, that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. And, you know, for the folks that think that everyone that, you know, calls themselves a patriot is some kind of an idolater is just, They need to re-examine their agenda, and you're certainly not going to win any converts by walking up and kicking people in the shin and telling them they're a devil worshiper or an idolater, you know, or a blasphemer or anything else. It's just a poor approach.
Strategy.
I think. Yeah,
yeah. If you're gonna say something, at least have some facts or something to back it up.
Well, that's why I asked the question, so.
Okay, we're going to put somebody else on here. I don't know who it is, guys. Hello?
Anybody there?
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Oh, that's Mr. Robert.
Hey, Robert. Hey.
How you doing, Robert?
Are y'all being patriots, or are you being?
We're being flag worshippers.
I'm just being me and American, Robert.
He didn't stick around to defend that one.
And you know, Robert, I wanted to tell you, I got that video link you sent me, and had it not come from you, I probably would have ceased watching it about, oh, I don't know, 2 minutes in when he started praising Lindsey Graham.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I know. But Ron, I swear, Ron, but didn't it sound like he was listening to our show?
Well, sure. He had all the right words to say. The problem with all those guys is that, you know, they're in government and they know all the right words to say when they're in front of a podium and a microphone. But are they carrying those actions out? Are they putting legs to those words in the Senate and in the House?
Or are they just giving us lip service?
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
lip service.
And I cannot stomach someone standing up there talking about, you know, all men being created equal, no matter where they live, at the same mouth that was just 2 minutes before praising Lindsey Graham as what a great guy. I wanted to hang myself.
Oh, man. I thought you would enjoy that bit. I thought you would enjoy that video.
It really makes me question the guy's judgment.
I watched it today. After 30 minutes, you know, I watched it. I sat there and wasted 30 minutes out of my time to watch it.
Well, I thought he gave a great speech. There was just a few scenarios. And the only thing he was missing is the, pat Joe Lieberman on the back, too.
Oh, man. You know, I saw Joe Lieberman on the news today. He looks horrible. He looks like, you know, he had this, like, red discoloration on the middle of his forehead. And I thought to myself, what does that tell you?
Well,
he's going to break out with the mark of Caesar on his forehead here pretty soon.
He looked like his face was ready to explode. I swear. He looked off today. He didn't look well. He looked awful. He looked terrible.
Well,
now, he's retiring. Is that correct? Finally,
I think he is. I think he's not running. Now, all these guys that did. Yeah, I know. I think he's bowing down after he did all the damage.
Yeah, rats bailing off of a sinking ship.
Uh-oh.
Yep. I think Barney's prank also. I don't know who else. There's a few others. I wish Upchuck and Harry Reid would go.
I can only hope they can't swim.
I hear the name in a street after Pelosi in San Francisco.
Oh,
what is it?
Yeah,
what does it say? Dead
too.
End?
I don't know what. I was wondering if they were making suggestions. I was going to name it Immorality Avenue.
I call it Stretch Lane.
Should Nancy Pelosi, should she be singing I Left My Heart in San Francisco?
That's her brain.
Yeah. What's left of it? Her Botox. She doesn't have a heart. I hate her. Oh, I just hate her ideology.
Oh, my Lord.
Socialist.
See what I caused?
No, you didn't cause it, Robert. You didn't cause it. We're each guilty of our own animosity towards these people.
Well, I can't give you any reason to have animosity towards them.
You're exactly right, sir.
I think we should have a game show, something like Jeopardy, about the Constitution and the history of the United States and this and that. And the Tea Party should do battle in this Tea Party representatives against the establishment GOP and Democrats. And let the America see what the true results of that would be.
Absolutely. Oh, boy, we'd win hands down. We wouldn't even have to
put them up against your Congress.
I heard Dana Perino today say the Tea Party has been silent. Silent? Where the hell has she been? Did you not see what happened to Richard Lugar?
I know. It's crazy.
And
he's retired too, isn't he?
He is now.
Yeah.
He can be retired. He's retired.
He's been retired.
He is now.
Wow. It's amazing.
Funny.
It is funny. I mean, this whole thing is just, I mean, you know, and, you know, Ron was telling me, Ron, I apologize. Sorry, I couldn't get back to you, but when I tried my cell phone to get back to, it won't go back to, like, a regular phone for some reason. I don't know what's wrong, or unless I don't know how to do it. But at any rate, I thought of what you said about silver. You know, I'm gonna have to do it somehow, some way. I'm gonna have to start. But I think you're right. That's the only way to go.
Well,
you know?
it's not. You know, it's really not rocket science. The problem that we run into is that we are so indoctrinated to look at things in one way only. And what Robert and I were talking about was when you look at silver, the one thing that everybody looks at, whether it's gold or silver, whatever it is, cheeseburgers, gasoline, it doesn't much matter. Because the only method we know of paying for things is dollars, okay, we measure everything by the dollar. So say I bought silver at $5 an ounce 10 years ago. And I bought 100 ounces of silver. Well, now it's at $28 an ounce. I sell that silver and I think, man, I really made a lot of money. But in actuality, I have gained 1 cent. It's simply that my dollar stored the value of the dollars that I spent on my silver. My silver maintained the value of the dollars I spent on it when I bought it at $5 an ounce. It will now get me an equivalent amount of dollars in today's dollars, equivalent to what it was when it was $5 an ounce.
Right, exactly. I think I understand that premise.
No, it's like a U.S. savings bond.
Yeah, well, no,
you buy
not
it
really.
Today, you buy it today, you pay 25. In so many years, it's worth 50. But in so many years, that 50 won't buy what 25 will today.
Correct.
Right.
You know, and that's. So that's the idea behind the silver, because the silver and the gold, even though it's heavily manipulated, closely follows dollar valuation. So as the dollar gets weaker and is worth less, or as inflation comes in and things cost more, you've had a store of value in that silver coin. You know, you paid $5 for it 10 years ago. Today it's worth $28, and that $28 will buy just about what $5 would 10 years ago. So you haven't gained anything and you haven't lost anything. You kind of break even, and that's the idea, not to lose value in your money.
Sure. That's
the
whole
point. Yeah, and if the market goes the other way, if you buy it at $28 and it goes down to $5 an ounce, well, that $5 is going to purchase what $28 would when you bought the silver. Because the dollar's gone up
change.
In value. Right.
Yeah. But the coin doesn't change. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a store of value, so that you're not going to lose your shorts. Because unless the world completely loses its mind, silver's never going to go to zero. Okay. And neither is gold. It's never going to happen.
Wow. Well, yeah. It's this monetary system. I can't. It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's just so convoluted.
It is. Now, did you hear what our anointed one did today? Anything about the health care?
No.
Now he's sending emails to all the universities and colleges around the United States, telling him that he just passed a law stating, quote unquote, that that it's okay for their children to stay on their parents' health care until they're 26.
Well, yeah, that's
inside
part of
the health.
That's part of Obamacare.
Yeah.
He's doing that to try to keep. He's got 40 institutions suing him.
I know.
It's over 50 now.
He's pimping votes is what he's doing. Come on.
What he should add in there to all these colleges he's sending in. And don't forget, you're the ones that's going to pay for it all.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
I seen a little cartoon yesterday, and it had Obama whispering to Joe Biden, "Hey, Joe, we got to do something. The kids are figuring out that they're the ones going to have to pay for all this."
Yep.
And then I saw how Notre Dame has filed a lawsuit against Obama already.
Well, they joined in with the Archdiocese and everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, my God. I mean, the guy's in a corner right now, but, you know, I have to hand it to the guy. He's holding his
own. Oh, and it's how he reaches out to people. He wants the Latino vote. So what's he do? Him and Eric Holder get together, sell guns to Mexican drug cartels, and kill 47,000 of them. Yeah, that's really. Yeah,
Robert, are you talking about Anthony Weiner or Obama?
I'm talking about.
Well, you said he was holding his own. I didn't know. I wasn't sure who you were referring to there.
You setting me up, Ron. I swear to you.
I don't have to try, though. You do it yourself.
Do not need to back up, guys.
Oh, I asked for your views, right?
Robert, you fall right into the trap.
Oh, come on, Ron. You're funny. when I heard those two, I was like totally amazed. I was just like totally amazed how this guy is just trying to get the vote, man. That's all he's doing.
Oh, sure. That's all he's been doing since he's been in office.
Hook or crook, he's going to do everything he can to get whatever vote he can.
He comes out there and says if Romney's experience to be president is that he ran a business, that's not good enough, whatever. But what the hell experience did he have at anything?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Community organizing. In other words, stirring up the people who live in the slums.
Well, you look at Marco Rubio, and people are saying, you know, perhaps he doesn't have the experience. He's done more in the time he's been in Congress than Obama did the entire time he was. And
Obama voted present.
So
and I believe he voted present because he thought he'd get one.
Yep.
I'm strong. I mean, I don't know anymore, man.
All of a sudden he's part Cherokee.
Oh my God!
I really want to hear how he comes up with that, because just like Elizabeth Warren, she couldn't prove it. I want to see him prove that, how he's part Cherokee.
Oh my
God! Kenyan. Missed us. It's Kenyan, not Cherokee.
What was it?
It's Kenyan. It's not Cherokee.
Well, he has just come out saying he's part Cherokee. He was talking to the Native Americans and come up with the idea that he's part Cherokee.
Yeah, he's prompted by that.
I'm here to tell you, I live with a Cherokee, and she didn't take that very kindly.
His prompter told him to say that. You guys, come on. The prompter says that it has to be true.
So if he's not... So basically, he must be Polynesian too.
He's everything.
He's everything. He's
Irish. He's German. He's Jewish.
He's got to be Jewish. I was gonna say. I mean, you know.
He's a Kenyan.
He's not Jewish the way he treated Netanyahu. You don't treat Netanyahu the way he did.
I thought BB handled him pretty well.
Oh, he did.
Well, the news that they've got this inspection thing with Iran going on, Netanyahu got on the news today and said, it's another scam, people. Don't be stupid. But this administration will buy it and you know, hook, line, and
sinker. All they do is let Iran keep buying time and buying time and buying time. Did you know that Ahmadinejad had a meeting with Farrakhan and Malik Shabazz?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. There's three stooges for you.
Well,
oh,
they're all brothers in Islam, you know, just like when Farrakhan went over to meet with Gaddafi years ago, when he was, you know, public enemy number one, before Saddam Hussein you know, was public enemy number one.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Well, in that meeting, was Farrakhan made a quote in that meeting about Malcolm X would have been here, too. He would have supported this, too.
No,
I'm thinking, well, we'll never know that because you killed him.
Yeah,
right.
Unbelievable.
And what I know of Malcolm X, I don't believe he would have been in support of it, and that's one of the reasons why they killed him. And,
I don't either.
You know, all these black folks that are turning Muslim, and that they think that these Muslims are going to embrace them, they better go take a look because they don't like black folks.
Yeah, they really embraced them in Northern Africa there, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, they really embraced them in Africa the first and second time they conquered Africa during the caliphate. I mean, they slaughtered them wholesale took and sold them off as slaves, you know.
Yep.
But, hey, it's us white folk over here that started the whole slave trade. Just, you know, take that to the bank.
So we started the slavery in Egypt and before that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
yeah, you didn't know that?
Oh, no. I figured it was, you got to blame somebody, blame the white folk.
And I don't know how many of you might have run into some of these folks in Washington, D.C. when we were out there, the Moors. Yeah, you got this new movement in part of the black community, the Moorish movement, the Moors. And so they believe, a lot of them believe themselves descended from the Moors, and it's kind of an odd mix of Christianity and Islam with a superiority complex, a little narcissism mixed in. Those people are crazy whacked out.
Wow.
Scare me, Ron. I thought you was talking about the Moore family from a few miles south of me.
No.
Oh, God.
Oh, my goodness.
And, Lord.
You were talking to my stepmother around the World War II Memorial. And they gave her a little pamphlet or something. And I'm like, Mom, why are you talking to these people? You don't even understand what they believe. They think they think you're Satan, okay, because you're white, period. And the only reason they're being nice to you is because they're in public.
Wow. That's bizarre. Well, according to the history that I've been reading, in I think it was 1616, and they had the Dutch slave traders actually were buying the black Africans from the black Muslims.
Yes.
And that was they went over to Africa, the
Ivory Coast,
and they just stole them out of their villages and just chained them and sold them, put them on those god awful ships.
So that would have been Obama's ancestors.
Yeah.
I mean, all through the Horn of Africa, Tripoli, up through there. You know, that's when you hear the Marine Corps hymn. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli.
Yep.
That's what they're talking about.
I know. Because Jefferson had to kick their ass. He was pissed.
Yeah, he was tired of paying tribute to them. But look what we've been doing ever since. I mean, Black Jack Pershing was probably the last general we had with any testicles when it came to the the Muslims, you know? And he took a belt of machine gun ammunition and ran it through pig's blood. Over in the Philippines, and he mowed him down, and he left one witness, and he said, you go tell your buddies, this is what happens to them when they mess with us.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, people just like
to
create their own.
Well, that just put him up on my list with Brad.
People love to create their history out of whole cloth, don't they? It just aggravates me.
Well, you know, a good friend of mine said that history, you know, if you hyphenate it, it's his story.
Right.
His story.
But
that's funny.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of times when you look at the dates and you go back and you read, and there's more than three or four or five people saying the same thing from different parts of the world, you kind of think maybe it's got a smattering of truth to it.
Well,
you know?
Now, here's, you talk about history, and I know I've really been on my high horse about this book I'm reading, The Jewish Wars, from
mm-hmm.
Josephus Flavius, all right? And I want to know, a polling of the audience here, since we have Hollis and Bill. I think Hollis had to run to the phone, but did you know that, number one, the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem in 70 AD occurred in the same month and on the same day as the first destruction of the temple from the Babylonians?
Right. No, I didn't.
Okay.
Nope.
So you have the destruction of the first temple, and I'm just going to make up a date. We'll say May 5th. Okay? And then here it is, 1,290 years later, in
mm-hmm.
70 AD, you have the utter destruction of the temple on May 5th.
Wow.
Also, Josephus testified, as did many of the people that, you know, were left over after the siege and the battle in Jerusalem, that for an entire year before the siege, there was a star that shined above Jerusalem that looked like a sword pointing directly into the heart of the city at the temple. And a comet that was visible streaking across the sky for an entire year.
Wow.
Now, they went into, and I'd probably get my timing off a little bit, but the siege occurred right after the Passover.
Wow.
Is when the siege of Jerusalem started. During the Pentecost, which is not
mm-hmm.
Jewish, that is Christian, the Christians claimed that they heard rumblings and they saw images in the sky that looked like chariots with warriors fighting in the heavens.
Oh my gosh. So that goes along with the preterist.
This is not, you know, I don't know if Josephus Flavius was a preterist or not, but I can assure you that from his own firsthand accounts and accounts of rabbis and priests,
mm-hmm.
The ones that lived, they knew, they absolutely stood on the fact that this was fulfilling of prophecy. This was the day, that terrible day that was prophesied of.
Mm-hmm.
There were false prophets. There was one false prophet that enticed the people to get on the roof of the temple because he claimed that God was going to deliver them. And the temple was on fire and it collapsed and they were killed.
Wow.
I heard that story.
And it's horrid. And there's one story, and he said he did not witness it, but he heard it secondhand, but it was horrendous enough that he believed it. And the reason
wow.
he believed it is because of the people that told him. There were three factions in Jerusalem, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You had the regular folks, and this gang descended on them from another city that had escaped the Romans. And once they let them in, they took over, they killed the high priest, they were slaughtering people in the streets, and they took over. Well, then here comes another gang of folks who are in pursuit of the guy that's in there tearing up the city.
Mm.
And the people are like, well, crap, we're going to let them in, he'll kill them. So they let them in, now they've got two warring factions and the regular folks. So they've got this huge civil war within the city. And both groups are going around just wholesale murdering people. And the one group, the second one, Simon's group, and not Simon that was in the
right.
scriptures. His guys were dressing up like women.
Oh.
And sashaying down the street, as Josephus put it, walking effeminately. And as they would approach men, they would pull out their swords and cut their throats. So this report came from two of those cutthroat, no good, I mean, they're horrible people,
mm-hmm.
that they smelled something cooking, okay? And there was no food. They were in a famine. And so they burst into this woman's house, and they demanded that she give them the food that she was cooking. It was her son.
Oh, my God.
She murdered her infant son, who was still nursing. She cooked him. She ate half. She produced the other half and told them, "I saved the choicest part for you." Even they were so horrified, they ran out, vomiting.
Unbelievable. Yikes.
And you had father against son, and son against father, mother against their children. It was horrible. I cannot imagine. And they said the stench of the dead bodies, and I forget the number. They weren't burying them. They wouldn't lay, if you tried to bury somebody, they'd kill you.
Oh my God.
So eventually they were throwing them outside the gate of the city down into one of the big ravines. And he gave a number. It was in the hundreds of thousands.
Good grief.
And the Romans said the smell was so horrid.
Oh.
I mean, it's a heart-wrenching account when you read it.
I can imagine.
What's the name of the book?
It's called The Jewish Wars. And it was written by Josephus Flavius. It was written in 75 A.D.
Wow.
If you go to Amazon or Kindle, if you've got an iPad, you can download it for free.
Really? I should read it.
The first few books, it's divided up into several books, like five books with one book.
Mm-hmm.
The first few, for me, it's a tough read anyway, because it was translated from Aramaic into Greek and then from Greek into English. So the grammar is all jacked up.
Wow.
You know,
it's kind of upside down and backwards. You know, they talk really, it's worse than Old English, way worse. To them, they did run over there who summoned him from hence the fourth. And you're like, what? I mean, it's a tough read. But the first several books really are laying out a history of the Jewish people from the time of Christ up to the time of the siege.
That's
but
unbelievable.
Once you start getting into the real meat of it, when you know they're going around and what the Romans did was they went and they demolished all the cities in Israel outside of Jerusalem. They raided every one of them. The cities that surrendered, they treated everyone well. They let them stay in their homes, keep their possessions. You know, they weren't just out to murder people. Those cities that fought and wouldn't relent, they leveled them.
Unbelievable.
And they did that with a purpose. And the purpose was Vespasian wanted to get all the outlying towns in order so that when he came to Jerusalem, they would see that, you know, he wasn't there to be a tyrant.
Mm-hmm.
He was benevolent. And he did. He cried for them. And he showed more reverence for the temple than did the Jews that were in the city. And he told them so.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
He told them through Josephus, and Josephus, who was one that he captured. I told you where they drew lots and they killed each other.
Yeah.
And he surrendered, and Caesar, Caesar's son, Titus, they honored the man. They had great respect for him. They didn't keep him in chains, and he went with them and tried to talk sense into the people when they were besieging the walls. And he went up and he told them, he said, look, you know, do you, and he's pleading to his countrymen.
Mm-hmm.
He said, do you really suppose that it's the Romans that bring this destruction upon you? He said, look at me. Do I look like I'm a slave to you? He said, you have become a slave to yourselves, and you've defiled everything that God has given you. And he starts going through the Jewish wars. And one of the points that he makes, and this is something I never thought about, because we always read the Bible, and you know, I remember that you know, David slew Goliath and all this. But he makes a point to him. He said, never, ever, ever, from the founding of Israel, did you go out in battle to attack another country and win. You never left Jerusalem to go out and attack your neighbors as raiders and win. No, you lost when you tried that junk. It was only when you stayed home and prayed to God and put it in his hands, when your enemies came at you, that he destroyed them.
Right.
When you tried to be the conqueror, when you tried to expand your empire, you got your butts kicked.
Pretty profound stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and here is Caesar telling you, surrender the city. He doesn't want to destroy your city. Surrender it. He wants to honor your temple and show it the homage that God deserves, that belongs to mm-hmm. God. And yet you fight against it, and you won't be happy until it's utterly destroyed. So
boy,
its destruction and all this blood is on your hands. Because he offered you his right hand. He offered you a way out and a way to stay in your city and keep your possessions and stay in your home. And you know, your life wouldn't change. It would. Everything would go on as normal.
That sounds like an amazing book, Ron.
Yeah, it does.
I'm telling you, it is. I started reading it. I couldn't put it down. I couldn't stop. Once you start getting into the meat, it's like, holy cow, I never knew this. I mean, these are all things that, this is history. We don't talk about that history. We talk about, you know, the Columbus, you know, the founding fathers.
Sure.
And this is all history that I had heard bits and pieces over the years. I'd seen a few movies here and there, but, you know, they always take poetic license and those things.
Sure.
But this is as close as you get to a firsthand
account
of what actually happened and what the people of that day were saying about the events that occurred. And
yeah,
you know, Josephus in the book, he's telling you, he's like, look, you know, forgive me for getting carried away with trying to exonerate my own people. He said, that's not my intent here. You know, my intent is to give an accurate recording of what happened, and I don't want to put the Romans into wonderful a light. It's not that I'm in love with the Romans. I want to give you the true history of what happened. But there are certain instances where he can't help himself because he's stunned by the benevolence and by the arrogance. And he's just, you know, you can tell the guy just wanted to pull his hair out, I'm sure.
Amazing.
It's amazing.
They actually, he said that there was so much plunder after they burnt the temple to the ground. There was so much plunder that the soldiers took out of the treasury of the temple that the price of gold in Syria fell by half. It so flooded the market that the price of gold went down 50%.
Good grief.
That's substantial.
That's a lot. Especially that quick. Boy.
The moral of the story is they're fighting over other people's money back even then.
What wasn't the money? They didn't care about the money. Now I will say that the one group that was with John and the Idumeans, okay, even after the Romans had broken through the walls and they were building ramps up to the temple. I mean, it was obvious they were done. They were defeated. And the Romans did something really crafty. before they, you know, when they were besieging the wall, and they put up a hell of a fight, there's no doubt. So they said, okay, we're not going to, we don't want anyone running away. So what the Romans did is they built a wall all the way around the city on the outside. They built a wall with one opening so that anybody that would escape the city wasn't going to escape. Huh. They weren't yet that you weren't going to get away. This wasn't going to happen. So here they are. They've broken into the city. They're in the streets. They're in the temple courtyard. And these guys are still running around murdering people and stealing their possessions as if they're going to go and spend them on something. I mean, where are you going? You're going nowhere.
Wow.
You can have treasure piled to the moon. It's not going to buy you freedom. And they did not want their freedom. The guys that were crazy, that were going around killing people, they didn't want their freedom. And not only that, they didn't want the people that were there to be able to escape to the Romans to safety, so they'd murder them.
Oh, my Lord.
They were hell-bent on dying. And they weren't there to protect. They weren't there to protect the temple or any treasure or anything else. They were just there to kill and to shed as much blood as they could.
Yeah, sounds like a real joyous book.
You know, Titus was so pissed that, you know, even after they were completely conquered, they had the whole city. They were in. Mm-hmm. He's in the courtyard. They're standing there. And now they want to negotiate, and he was furious. And he said, you know, I've waived the laws of war for you many times against counsel did I extend an offer of my right hand and safety if you would but just cease, and you refused. And now that you are surrounded, you think that you're going to negotiate with me? Oh, no. He said, my men have orders to put every damn last one of you to death. And they were killing people and killing people and killing people until they got tired of killing people.
Unbelievable.
The soldiers were wore out. They're like, do we have to keep doing this? I mean, this is pointless. And so he said, yeah, you're right. You know, I mean, he had no fury left in him. He had no anger, and all he had was pity. And
yeah.
even then, they were just obnoxious.
Weird, very weird.
It is. It's something that I can't really. You'd have to read it. It's stunning.
And when was all this published? Well, tell me.
75 AD.
Wow. It's come down that far. That's amazing. That is wild.
That's 5 years after the destruction of the temple. And it has, I mean, it's been, you know, rewritten and reviewed and translated and transliterated by several people.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Is Hollis back, or is he playing, doing something different?
He may be on the phone. He had phone calls coming in.
Oh, yeah. He gets busy, I know. Well, I'm kind of disappointed that Robert's not going to come to Indiana.
Oh, Robert.
We got to get him.
Yes, he don't want him to miss out.
Does anybody know if Magic's coming?
If who?
Mr. Magic.
I have no idea yet.
I know he said he's going to try.
Yeah,
I know
he had talked. He had talked several times about it, and once he wasn't going to, then he was, and it always depends on his health at the moment, I think.
Right. Yeah. Well, the more the merrier. I'd just love to have a really good group of people there. That would be fun.
We do need to work on an itinerary on Saturday of what we're going to do while we got the pavilion.
Okay.
Well, I could just about take up your entire day at the pavilion. No, not me personally, but I've got some CDs that The Spirit of 76. it's a DVD, and it is two discs, I believe it is, but it's long, and it is the entire Constitutional Convention reenacted word for word from the minutes of the convention.
Awesome.
That's pretty cool. So we're gonna have a way to play CDs and music.
Yes.
Awesome.
I put you a link in the chat room there, guys, that has a whole bunch of links on a page to Josephus.
Okay.
And all the different writings of him online and resources for his writings.
Cool. Well,
I'm just looking to see if I can see something in here where it talks about where it was first, you know, translated and published, but I don't see it in there.
Now, was there any progress made on ways to do the live feed broadcast when I'm running around town?
Well, the only way I know to do it at this point is would be through a cell phone that, you know, has the 3G capabilities.
Yeah, I don't have one of those yet, so I don't know what the prices are out there. So
now, I don't know, does the phone you have, Linda, does it have, can you do video on it?
I think I can, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm not hooked to an internet yet, so I got to figure out how to do that.
Right. Well, what you can do is you can take your phone and do video while you're at the events and, you know, interview people. And then when you get home, you can download that into your computer and then convert the file and put it in a video that you can put online.
Okay. Got it. We'll have to try that one of these days, but I got to get this put into a browser, you know, where I can go. Internet, so that would be wild. Yeah,
we can make a video while we're all at Delaney.
Yeah,
we got to do that.
I absolutely was thinking about that.
Well, I'm bringing my regular camera, and I think it's got some video capabilities as well, so I'll check it out. Yep.
Okay. Occupy.
What's going on, Bill?
Well, today, you know, I think it was today, it might have been yesterday, they tried to nail Obama. Does he still support Occupy? And, of course, he didn't give a real answer. And they tried to get to Jay Carney, and again, he didn't give a real answer.
Well, who was interviewing them?
Oh, it was the White House Press Corps. It was interviewing Carney. And Obama was just given a statement, and afterwards he was asking, answering questions, and someone asked him that question, and he, as always, dodged around it, never gave an answer. I don't think he wants to give an answer.
Of course not.
To be honest, but they're still trying to compare. Well, I heard Juan Williams today, still trying to compare the Tea Party to Occupy. And Juan Williams brought up the spitting incident again, and as the guy told him, show me proof. Show me proof the spitting even happened. Because so far there's never been anyone able to collect the reward for showing proof.
Well, Juan Williams doesn't have much going upstairs for him. I'm sorry, that guy, all he does is he's like a little video recorder. He listens to these people, he takes it all in, and then he spews it back out, just like a videotape.
Oh, he's definitely no Thomas Sowell.
I don't think Juan Williams has an original thought in his whole being. I'm sorry. I can't listen. He's just so brainwashed. I don't understand it. It's a cult.
Well, most of them in the media on that side are brainwashed.
It's like they've all joined this Jim Jones cult. Oh, I can't
think of it
anymore.
It's amazing.
Oh, irresponsible.
You're trying to compare two different groups,
and make them both sound to be the same. When one group's had how many arrests, rapes, murders, stabs a cop, defecating on police cars, bomb threats, and all this and that, and the other group hasn't had crap, how can you compare them?
Well, because they, you know, when you have the facts on your side, you use facts, and if you have the law on your side, you use the law, and if you have none of those and it's just, you know, rhetoric, then you turn to Saul Alinsky, and that has been, that little trick has been used since probably the mid-1860s. So, I mean, it's crazy. They don't have facts on their side, so they make up stuff. Pretty simple.
No, I haven't watched it yet. I know there's supposed to be something on tonight about who is financing Occupy. That's going to be it. To me, I want to see that because I want to see if they tell the truth about who is financing Occupy.
Well, I'm gonna give you a hint. Okay, I'm just gonna take a wild guess. If history is any indicator, Occupy folks were probably financed just like the folks in the 60s were financed by the very people who they thought they were protesting against.
Exactly.
Yep.
And
useful idiots are just anarchists, and you've got the Communist Party USA, the SDS. It's insane.
Well, isn't next Tuesday the primary and the recall election in Wisconsin?
Yes.
A lot of people say that's going to tell a lot.
It is.
They'll say that until the results. If Walker wins, then it'll be, well, it don't tell a story. But if Walker loses, well, this will tell a story that Americans are unions and all this and that.
Oh, I know.
But we're having liberal papers come out and support Walker. We're having Democrats come out and support Walker, arguing that, and I like the argument, that the only issue here is the unions. One issue, it's the unions pushing it. This isn't about what's good for the state of Wisconsin. This is only about what's good for union members and union leadership, really, and political gain.
Right.
And we're seeing Walker holding a lead in all the polls.
Well, the unions don't want to give up their seat of power or their, I mean, that's what I see.
Of course they
do. Yeah. And that's exactly why Obama stacked the NLRB.
Yeah.
It was to further the power of the unions.
Yeah, well, see, Obama and the unions and all the radicals, they're all in each other's pocket. I mean, it's pretty clear. And, you know, the Democrats don't have a monopoly on this kind of foolishness.
No.
We've got a lot of establishment GOP the same way. So it's
exactly
a circus.
It is a circus. They don't look at who's putting the bug in their ears. Like Ron said, a lot of times it's the same people that they're protesting. And it's like they have no sense. I understand why the unions want all the power. They want all the power that comes with the union dues and being able to hold a thumb over everybody.
Well, then they can give all their money to the Democrat Party or the Socialist, I call them the Communist Party now. It's a vicious circle. I mean, they're all feeding each other. It's not.
Yeah. Well, they're saying Obama's going to raise all this money for his campaign, and my question was, how much of that money was laundered out of the taxpayers through leftist orgs and unions?
Well,
because
I know
that's exactly what it was.
He's going around the entire country, going to all the rich places and having these giant state dinners and his campaign dinners, and he's charging, what, $60,000 a person or whatever he gets. And this is one of the things he's doing. He started out with, you know, George Clooney, and then he went over to, I don't know where he's now, but he's doing six days a week or whatever he can get, you know, when he takes
Sarah
time
Parker.
From his basketball. Huh?
Sarah Jessica Parker or somebody. Somebody like, I don't know. That's who he's with now. Just doing a fundraiser for him. Yeah.
Left wing. Yeah. The left wing of Hollywoodites and New Yorkites. Idiots. I don't get it. How do these anti-capitalists explain all of their riches? I mean, they're not the Fed. They can't just digitize it.
Well, I don't see them giving all their. I don't see them sharing all their wealth with everybody.
Do they? Do these stupid people like
unless you're counting drug dealers and hookers?
You know, George Clooney, all the rest of these morons in Hollywood and New York. Do they think that in any other country on the planet they would ever have this type of riches just reading a script or whatever profession they would choose to go into? Hell no. They're so hypocritical and I just don't even know the words to describe that. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Unless the whole idea is now that they've made it, they just want to close the door on everybody else and make a total serfdom. Which they're
yeah, that makes them
doing.
Well, that makes them elitist and globalist. That makes
right.
them people who think
power.
They are entitled. I'm such a great actor. I'm entitled to all the money and the wealth and drugs and whatever. I'm above the law. I can
yep.
break the law and violate the law. Buy my way out of it every time. Worst happens, they're going to send me to what, a rehab center for what, a week? I mean,
that's the only kind of logical conclusion you could come to is that they don't give a rat's behind about capitalism from here on out, but boy, they got theirs, and they know exactly how they got it. They got it through market, enterprise. They didn't get it through totalitarian, you know, regimes like or anywhere else you want to talk about, or North Korea. Oh, God, they just...
No, and they wouldn't have, and they know it.
But, you know, yeah, they know. Of course they do. It just makes me tired. Like to put them all on a boat to North Korea, see how they like living in the dark over there.
That's where their warped mentality makes them think they would still be a superstar over there.
That's because they're so full of themselves, you know, narcissistic little turkeys.
And we have that. People putting out, you don't see Oprah jumping out there with her money this time.
Yeah, well, she lost a lot of viewership when she endorsed Zero, let me tell you. She learned her lesson.
She lost a lot of viewership when she tried to rewrite the Bible.
I don't know why in the hell anybody was watching her to begin with. The woman's a Fruit Loop and a fake.
That's true, absolutely. She got her riches through capitalism, too, the dummy. Of course, she sucked up to Tommy Cooley.
Exactly. My stepmother and my sisters used to watch her, and I'm like, oh my God. I mean, how can you have no discernment to sit and watch these people? It drives me insane. Thankfully, she doesn't watch her anymore. I'm like, hallelujah. There is a light on.
I have never watched her.
Yeah.
I never liked her from the get-go. I mean, yeah, you got to be an idiot to watch that crap, and it's a bunch of feel-good BS.
It's crazy.
Off topic, I wanted to go back to this Josephus thing for a moment, and I didn't read this, realize this, and I'm reading the daggum book. The Josephus that wrote the book is the Josephus who was the leader of the army in Galilee that lost to the Romans. He is, in fact, the guy that surrendered to Caesar after they killed each other down in the cavern.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So, I mean, he was there. He was standing. He's the one that was beseeching his fellow countrymen at the wall. He was there.
Unbelievable. That's good. Wow.
I never, because there's so many, as you're reading the book, there's a lot of names that repeat, you know, Josephus, Josias, Ananias, Simon, Jesus. There was a couple of guys named Jesus in there, not Christ, of course, but... So, yeah, I mean, I guess that kills the idea that they had on the History Channel that, you know, there's no record of anyone ever being named Jesus in Jerusalem.
The History Channel. Yeah, I know.
Well,
I've got a lot of
people
in my family that watch that thing.
I've seen shows that did just the opposite, that named all kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
It was a common name.
Right. And the thing we have to understand, this is another one of those things that comes up in my family, and they all roll their eyes at me and tell me I'm stupid or crazy. There actually was no one named Jesus and no one named Josephus or Josiah or Joseph or any other J word, because the J didn't exist.
Right.
Okay, the letter J is about 600 years old. it was a Y. But for our translation, it's a J.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that Jesus didn't exist or that Josephus didn't exist. It was just Josephus.
The pronunciation, yeah.
Right. It was the enunciation of it that is different, you know. That's why they say, you know, the name of Christ was Yeshua,
mm-hmm.
not Jesus, but it's the way we would say it in English if we were to decipher it out from the Hebrew.
Right.
It's just like a statistic.
Watch it, buddy.
What did he say? I missed it.
He said it's like a statistic.
Oh, God. Oh,
it's called a population. Or should I say a parameter?
It's funny.
I had to throw that in. I didn't upset you, though, did I, Ron?
No, not at all. Not at all.
We need humor.
But this J, it's just like the J and the P. It's also the J and like the P as for the priest. It's the same stuff. This is I can't remember all of them, but J was the Jews. J was the Jews. The P was for the priest. There was another P also stood for the prophets, and I can't remember the other two. Refresh my memory.
I don't know. And Hebrew is one of those things that I started kind of studying the Hebrew alphabet, and it's really complex. I mean, it looks pretty simple. There's not very many characters,
mm-hmm.
but not only can you write words with it, but each individual character has a meaning.
Right.
It's like hieroglyphics.
Exactly.
It's a pictogram, I think, is what they call it.
The Chinese characters, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how statistics is written in Greek. That's how, you know, like the
well, it's all Greek to me. But...
it's like the we're doing the value for summation is sigma. Which is a Greek word,
right?
So when they were doing all the notations, when the statisticians were doing the notations, instead of values of x1 plus x2 plus x3 plus x4 plus x5 plus x6, they would use the notation sigma and put the value of 6 on top of sigma, and the value of 4. In front of the value x, so that's how they were. That's how they came up with the summations. I mean, the Greeks were really intelligent people.
Well, they very much were, and I'm not sure that most people understand that the Greeks came after the Hebrews.
Right.
And I'm sitting here reading this. As far as the publication of the Jewish Wars, there mm-hmm. they note that there was an earlier edition that was written in Aramaic.
Right.
The earliest known edition was in Greek, and it was composed between 75 and 79 A.D.
Interesting. Wow.
So he probably sat down and wrote sometime shortly after, you know, started writing his memoirs, as it were, and mm-hmm. he never returned to the Jewish homeland. and he was a Roman. He was granted Roman citizenship, and
wow.
So some of the authors, some of the scholars have debated whether or not his accounts were trustworthy because of his affinity for the Romans. But they said the find of the Dead Sea Scrolls actually backed up a lot of what he said.
That's right. You're 100% correct. I learned that too.
So to me, it's all fascinating, and it's an entirely new realm of history that, you know, I wasn't acquainted with. We know some. You got bits and pieces, but it's what others have told you.
Right.
And it's not really the whole thing.
You don't know the whole story yet.
Right. And you're getting it from two competing views, you know. I mean, you're getting it from ostensibly the Catholic Church view, which would be the Roman view. Okay.
Right.
And then you're getting it from the Jewish view, you know, who are anti-Christian, anti-Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's very, very interesting. It really unfolds things. And I don't know how anyone could read the Bible, read this historical account, and not put 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah.
Even the Jews that didn't believe that Christ was the Messiah knew that this was God's judgment on them. I mean, they said as much.
You know, but when you were talking about the secret prophets, you know, the false prophets, I should say, the false prophets, some of the false prophets that were not mentioned. Wrote most of the Old Testament, and not too many people know that.
Well, and what I find interesting when I really start getting into my Bible, and I'm not trying to be uber critical, but if you read Ezekiel and then read Revelation, I think you'll see a strong resemblance between the two. A very, very strong resemblance. Now, I think there was, I'll go out on a limb and say that I think that perhaps John may have taken a little poetic license with some of the visions. Maybe not. You know, maybe that's what he literally saw in his visions. But there's these people that believe that, you know, every single jot and tittle of this prophecy has to be fulfilled the way they believe to interpret it in order for the event to have taken place, and I just don't see it. I mean, when you've got a body of prophecy sitting before you, and when, you know, a lot of it is allegorical at best, and 85% of it you can point to a point in history in a writing and say, look, this was fulfilled right here, this day, this line, it lines up directly with this. I mean, this happened, okay? Then I don't have to sit back as a Christian. I'm not sitting back going, oh, okay, well, you know, Josephus didn't write anything about the Euphrates drying up. Okay. You know, he probably wasn't at the Euphrates because he was at the wall of the temple. He was there while the fighting was going on. I didn't have to see the sun and the moon literally fall out of the sky. I think that, again, is another allegorical thing that, you know, they can debate and they can tween the tea leaves all they want. But for me, I mean, there's just so much evidence that what was prophesied long before, and when Christ came, you know, what he said was simply reiterating Isaiah, Ezekiel, Daniel. He was telling them, hey, I'm here, and I'm telling you, it's right here. It's right now. The time is now, okay?
Yep.
And depends on which version of the Bible you read, you know, where he says, oh, this generation shall not pass. Well, there's another in the King James Version where it says, there are some of you standing here that shall not taste death before these things happen. okay, you can't misinterpret that.
Yeah, that's pretty clear.
Yeah, and so which one is correct? Well, I think history needs to be our guide when we get to that point and say, okay, well, let's look back in history. Let's take a third view, what's actually occurred, and you look at what occurs, and it lines up with a good portion of what's in the book. I mean, you got to reach a conclusion at some time.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating what you've stumbled on, yeah.
And then if you look around the world at other ancient histories and that what they've said, a lot of things line up.
Well, it really does. And then, you know, you've got all these people that are, you know, for whatever reason, whatever the motive, they're very obstinate in their beliefs. And I guess that's okay. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to beat anybody up for their beliefs. But it's like, geez, guys, you know, I mean, you gotta look at history. And I've had people tell me, well, I don't rely on anything outside of the Bible to validate. Okay, well, you know, then, dude, you're walking around with blinders on.
Yeah, that's not being open-minded enough to at least look at something.
Right. I mean, you know, the guys that wrote in the Bible, and I mean, even at that, the Nicene Council, you know, that occurred in, what was it, 328? There was numerous, voluminous writings that weren't included in the Bible. And, you know, I know all the procedures and rituals and everything they went through to put together those books. But that doesn't mean you just dismiss all of that additional literature that didn't get included. And
did you ever think that maybe the Bible was the greatest joke played on the Catholics? By letting the Catholics believe they put this book together themselves? Didn't realize it was God who led it to be put together, so that there was just enough truth in it to offset the untruths.
Well, exactly. And you can ask any Christian out there today, how come your Bible doesn't contain the Apocrypha? And they're like, huh? Well,
know what that is.
Right. If you've got a Catholic Bible, well, then it does contain the Apocrypha. And the reason it contains the Apocrypha is because that's where you get the idea that it's right to be praying to the saints and to the Virgin Mary.
Oh.
So now we got a problem, you know.
that's something I've never understood. Why do I need middlemen? None of these saints, none of these people can save my soul. God is God. He don't need these other people. I can talk directly to him.
You don't that's need right. the middleman. They do.
Well, that's true.
They need the middleman, and they need you to believe that you need the middleman. And, you know, you can buy indulgences. It's okay if you sin as long as you pay the church beforehand.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's phenomenal. I hadn't heard that one. That's good.
Well, it's true. It's been done by the mafia and others.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah, I knew that, but oh, my goodness. That's funny. Well,
yep.
they'll come up with anything to be able to do what they want, huh?
Again, it's just a way to rationalize doing what you know isn't right.
Oh, yeah. Well, gee. Sounds like what Congress has been doing for 200 years.
You know what? One of my favorite jokes, and I'll shorten it up, was about a guy that dies in heaven, you know, and he's up there with St. Peter, and they're cruising along, and they see this group of people just throwing down. I mean, having a party. He says, who are they? He says, oh, that's the Baptists. And they go along a little further, you know, and he sees a group of people, and they're all hands up in the air and, you know, just praising and worshiping. He says, who's that? So that's the evangelicals. And they go along a little further, and they find this brick wall. He's like, what's up with the wall? He says, oh, it's the Catholics. They like to think they're the only ones up.
God. You're talking to a Catholic school graduate, Ron.
I know. You got the worst of both worlds, Robert. I don't know how you do it.
How in the world?
You have got to have like a black cloud following you, sir.
Robert is a Catholic Jew?
Yes.
Hey, I'm a Catholic Jew.
He's half Spanish, and half Jewish. You didn't
no,
catch
half,
my...
No, I'm a true Jew and half Spanish.
But not a, but
my mother,
not a
my, mother,
Jew.
My mother was Jewish, my father was Jewish, but my mother was Spanish Jewish. She was what we call a Sephardic Jew. And a Sephardic Jew is a Spanish Jew.
Now see,
that's
my Bill,
my grandfather... My grandfather only talked Spanish to me, so that's why I'm bilingual.
See, I asked Robert if he got thrown out of the Catholic Church for throwing a goat up on the altar during Mass, but I, you know.
Well, you know, there was a joke in my class, and the joke was, well, you know what you can't do? You can't become a Catholic. There's no way you can become a Catholic. I said, why not? He says, because you're not an altar boy.
That's a dangerous position.
So I hear. Literally.
But after a basketball game, I elected to eat the fish sandwich from McDonald's on Fridays.
So we may laugh and joke here, but the truth is, all of us probably here are supporting the Catholics in their fight against Obama and the health care mandates that violates their conscience. And
well, I have to defend them. Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, we have to defend them.
I have to stand with the Catholics. I think so. I agree with
well, especially now that you've had a ham sandwich, you're in trouble anyway. So, I mean, you know.
I was in trouble with them anyway, Ron. They threw me off their sites a couple of years ago.
God.
We were debating illegal immigration, and the Catholic guy was like, let he who hath no sin cast the first stone. And left it there. And I said, are you going to finish it? And the guy was like, what do you mean? Said you didn't finish it. You left it halfway done. When no one could throw a stone, he turned at the woman and he said, "Thou sins are forgiven. Thou art forgiven. Go and sin no more." You left that very important part off. Go and sin no more. He didn't say go back out and do the same things you were doing. He said go and sin no more.
Right. That means get the hell out until you get a green card.
Exactly. The proper thing would have been go home, get in the back of the line. We're being forgiven. We're letting you come back even though you broke our laws. But go get in the back of the line and come properly.
Yep.
So I was wondering about, speaking of green cards, it really flat-puzzled me last week when I found out that Michelle Bachmann criticized him. Michelle Bachmann.
Had dual citizenship?
How about that, Bill Strong?
Well, that didn't really surprise me. I mean, let's face it, Robert, every day there's so much crap coming out and you're sitting there. If I had hair, I'd pull it out. I'd try to get my hands off my beard.
Wait a minute. How did this lady think she was going to run for the presidency?
Yeah, that was my next.
That's not possible.
Well, she thought since Obama did it.
Well, yeah, this is true.
That's what really.
But there's a difference. He's not a citizen.
Right.
Oh man. So what is she?
We're about to run out of time here. One quick thing. Comments about the guy who has 30 kids by 11 women and wants us to pay his child support.
Get a job.
You better get a couple bad jobs.
Keep your pants on.
And he needs to suffer.
Kids?
You know, I read a story the other day. about a guy who was living in Florida, and he's now in Panama or somewhere, Venezuela, I think. He's suing a plastic surgeon because he went and got a penile implant and developed a flesh-eating virus, and you can imagine what disappeared.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Well, I think that the guy, and the one you're speaking of that has the 30 kids, he needs to get cut and tied.
No, he needs
oh,
to go
Lord.
Visit the plastic surgeon in Florida.
Definitely, somewhere.
All right, guys. God bless. I'm going to go to the chat room, and thank you, guys. That was fun.
Everybody, thank you. Good night. God bless. We'll be back here next Tuesday. Catch Linda tomorrow night at 7 o'clock from right from the left coast.
All right, Bill. Be good.
You too, Robert.
All right, hang in there. See you, Ron.